shoot, they score!
Score!
We have turned the clock, man!
Hit the shot, it's good!
This week in the NHL.
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We got
to
be focused all 60 minutes.
This week in the NHL.
The most arrogant team he's ever played against.
Do you think that's more of a personnel issue or more of a
scheme? He's dominating like the Jets wanted him to do.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. Now, Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. We hope you have enjoyed TSN 1290's coverage of the Toronto Blue Jays Kansas City Royals Game 5. We'll start there briefly before we get into hockey. The Jays live to fight another day, just as everyone expected, on the back of Marco Estrada. I mean, he's been unbelievable for this team all season long, and he was just as advertised today in a must-win game for the Toronto Blue Jays, going 7 2/3 innings and giving up only that solo home run to Sal Perez. What a pitching performance by Marco Estrada to send that series back to Kansas City for Game 6 on Friday night.
Yeah, Friday night, Drew. It's going to be an amazing game. I can't wait, and I mean, the game is incredible. The season's really been incredible, and just to be able to take it back now. And Mike Wilner was saying before we hopped on, if they do end up losing, at least they leave, you know, home and the season on a high note in Toronto. But this is kind of, you know, if you were to draw it up, you get David Price. I know he hasn't won the postseason, but you get David Price on Friday. He is, on paper, your best pitcher. And you're against Yordano Ventura, who's obviously got a great arm, strikes guys out, but you can get to him.
Wait, you like that matchup because that matchup was going so well in Game 2 until the fluke play between Batista and Goins.
Ventura's got great stuff, though.
Yeah, he does.
So, I mean, and obviously Price is great stuff. It's Kenny Locate's stuff. It's going to be fascinating. And the weather obviously being a factor, who knows what that'll be like. And forget about Game 7. Now we're worrying about Game 6, and it's going to be an incredible game. Two great teams. I mean, it's... The Mets pitching has been dominating in the NLCS. This has really been the series.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you mentioned the Mets, and of course they're, you know, trying to sweep the Cubs today. And you wonder, you know, if that pitching continues into the World Series, you wonder who can touch the Mets right now.
As an aside, he's kind of on point too. PTI, pardon the interruption. Watch it all the time.
Currently on one of the TSN channels.
Yeah,
in
one
the
of
studio.
The TSN channels. Watch it yesterday. Don't even have the Jays and the Royals in the top news, and have that bum Johnny Manziel there. Like, unbelievable. I mean, is this what it's come to?
Well, it's all about debate. Debate, 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 Richard. You know that.
Well, it's, you know, guys, by the way, good evening.
Hi.
It's been remarkable.
You guys actually saw each other earlier today, apparently.
We did. True. And thank you for bringing that up, Richard.
Yeah.
I was going for a walk with my wife and my child and my dog. And so Ezzy comes into the studio and he says, I saw you guys on Cordon. I say to him, no wave, no hello, no honk. You couldn't stop to see the baby. You haven't seen the baby yet.
True. Come see the baby.
Ezzy's logic? Well, I didn't want to honk because you have a child.
Well, you know, in my defense here,
please.
Because I'm rarely allowed to defend myself.
You're always allowed to defend yourself. You just usually don't have a good defense. There's a difference.
I saw you guys kind of hidden behind. You were coming around the corner and you're kind of hidden by other people that were passing you. And yeah, that was the reason why I didn't honk, because I wasn't sure Laura had the baby. And you're right, I haven't seen the baby. I'm going to come by any day now.
But why didn't you honk
this weekend? I just thought that maybe because Laura had the kid, maybe the kid was sleeping, and if I honked, it might wake the kid up.
But they're walking down Cordon.
Yeah, Cordon isn't
a high traffic street. Is
quite busy.
It can be peaceful.
It was. Cordon is rarely peaceful, I would suggest.
But there's not people honking every 3 seconds. I mean, you get the odd honk. But if I would have honked, and it probably would have been a couple honks, because you might not necessarily hear the first honk or know where it's coming from. Anyways, this is making me look bad, and I'm a good guy here. I should have said at least texted you or something. But anyways.
I don't want you texting. You can't text and drive. You know better than that.
Well, I mean, I should have texted you maybe after I got home or something.
The story would have been the same.
It was
you
only
saw
like
us,
an hour and a half ago, so.
The point is you haven't seen the baby.
Anyways, I will come see the baby. I promise I will, probably this weekend, if not early next week. Anyways, I just wanted to say, to Richie's point about the Blue Jays here, I think it's unbelievable what this team does when their backs are against the wall. I mean, it's unbelievable, right? They face elimination and you know, they're the first team since the Red Sox, I believe, to win all four elimination games, or three, is it? Well, I guess they've had three elimination games.
This was the fourth one. Yeah.
And so it's really incredible. You mentioned Marco Estrada, who's been excellent the entire year, and he obviously has more to play for than just getting to the World Series. He's a UFA, right?
Yeah.
So it's incredible. And Tulowitzki, 11 RBIs. He's leading all hitters right now. It's incredible. And to me, the best thing about the Blue Jays' run here is that the entire country is watching. And Richie mentions PTI. It's unfortunate because I think the story, if the Jays end up getting to the World Series, and I think, you know, with Price and Stroman coming up, they can do it. I think the story is going to be, whether it's the Mets or the Cubs, you're playing against an entire country.
Before we transition to hockey, I think the best part about the Jays being in the ALCS and possible World Series is that we don't hear anything about the Maple Leafs.
Yes,
it's amazing.
It is very refreshing,
it's
isn't
great.
It?
Oh, it's amazing.
It's almost like they're going...
Mike Babcock talking about how hard they work. So I want to hear more about that.
Well, we promise it won't be on today's show because there's nothing to talk about with the Maple Leafs. They're a bad team, and we don't talk about bad teams unless they're interesting bad teams, and the Maple Leafs certainly aren't that. Transitioning back to the Winnipeg Jets, that's of course our primary focus, but you got to throw a little love to the to the local baseball team or the country's national baseball team right now. The Jets, of course, on this big five-day gap in between games, having last played Sunday afternoon. Yes, it's five. I can see you doing the math in your head there, Richie. It's 5 days between Sunday and Friday's game coming up against the Tampa Bay Lightning. We'll be joined by Brian Engblom in about 10 minutes' time to preview that game. I want to go back to Sunday, and there's something that's sort of been bothering me since that game took place. And that's the decision that Paul Maurice made in putting Anthony Peluso into the lineup and taking Nick Pettan out. And here's my theory on that. I mean, I know why he did it, because the Blues are a rough and tumble team. You know, they certainly are a very physical team. And
they're a heavy team.
They're a heavy team.
That's what it's called. You'll hear, you know, hockey people talk about that it's a heavy game. That's what type of game they play. They played Montreal last night and lost, but that's a heavy team. Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah. I always have a problem with... I'm never a big fan of replacing skill out of your lineup with a player who really isn't that good, with all due respect to Anthony Peluso. I mean, he was insignificant in that game, and the St. Louis Blues fourth line, of which Ryan Reeves is a valued member of that, was a significant force in that game. And I just thought that by taking the skill out of the lineup, Paul Maurice sort of played into the hands of the St. Louis Blues. Whereas if you put the skill, you keep the skill in, sure, there's a chance that the Blues' physicality is going to overwhelm you. But for the most part, I mean, a skilled player is a skilled player, and they don't come around that often.
I think there's no doubt, Richie and Drew, that the decision to dress Anthony Peluso was a little bit controversial because he hadn't played yet, and he didn't play much last year. I think he was in, 35 or 40 games? I don't have it in front of me. But it was controversial because of the fact that Nick Pettan played really well, and the St. Louis Blues are a very good team, and it was clear that he was being put into the lineup to be kind of an enforcer and to provide them with more of a physical element. He ends up playing 4 minutes and 59 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't get into any fights. He doesn't really have any impact on the game. So I agree with you. Paul Maurice made the decision, though, right? And, you know, for better or for worse, that decision was made. Now, they didn't lose the game just because Anthony Peluso was in the lineup.
Certainly not.
The St. Louis Blues, I think, are a top five team in the NHL. Most of us picked the Blues to finish either first or second in the Central Division. So I see what you're saying, Drew. The decision was a little bit curious because Nick Pettan had been playing very well on that fourth line with Andrew Kopp and Chris Thorburn, and you almost want more skill in the lineup because later in the game, when the game was tied, you needed a goal from somebody else that wasn't just Mark Scheifele or Nikolai Ehlers. There weren't a lot of lines aside. And also, we should mention Blake Wheeler, Andrew Ladd, Brian Little. That line was also good. But I agree with you. If it was my decision, I probably would have kept Pettan in the lineup because you still have Chris Thorburn. You still have Dustin Byfuglien, who we saw take the double minor at the end of the game. You still have a lot of guys that can throw the weight around. Adam Lowry, I think, led all players in hits that game, or he was up there. So it was a curious decision. And you got to think that coming up against Tampa on Friday, Peluso won't be in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the matchup as a kind of a speed team that would likely he wouldn't fit in there. You know, I can see it from Paul Maurice's perspective in a couple of ways. One is, if you before the game you want to get Peluso in against a big team, and you know, I'm not a big Anthony Peluso fan in terms of you know, what he brings to the table. But the guy played his first game. He gets dropped in there. He doesn't play much. Tough to get, you know, acclimated to the surroundings against a team that's playing with pace and is very physical. So it's tough to just get dropped in there. I don't think Matan's been particularly great. No, it doesn't mean I don't think he should continue to play, as he, but he's, you know, he's had some good games, some games where he struggled a bit. If you see the game, I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers, you know, was able to create some chances for sure, but he got pushed around a bit. He was noticing the physicality, and St. Louis certainly got physical with the Jets and pushed the Jets around. So even with Peluso there, it didn't seem to make a ton of a difference. You know, he gets hurt, Paul Maurice does, when he can't trust the fourth line to play against St. Louis's fourth line. I thought St. Louis's fourth line was very effective. You mentioned Ryan Reeves, Steve Ott, and Kyle Brodziak, Drew. You know, Kyle Brodziak's not a fast skater, neither is Ott, but both were taking faceoffs, righty and lefty, Brodziak and Ott. Pretty smart players, were in on the forecheck, and were really giving Ken Hitchcock big minutes and quality minutes. So I thought that was, you know, when you put in a guy like Peluso, can you, and you don't trust the line, not just because of him, but maybe the other guys as well, would you have trusted them with Patan against that guy, the line? Now, maybe you would have more, but that's a big line and a force. And there's a reason Nick Patan, I mean, probably partially, I think, skating a little bit here and mostly size, why he's not playing the middle. So, I mean, and the boards is more physical than the middle. You have less room to get out of the way. So that would have been tough. So I can see where he was going with that, and I agree with your guys' point being made that, you know, we're in Winnipeg analyzing the fourth line, but that's not the main reason they lost. The Jets were outplayed, I thought, as the game went on, which I thought was a reverse of their past few games, you know, getting better as the game went on. So St. Louis played a smart game, played a pretty physical game, and we talked about it. You know, I've said it on the show before. I think the Jets are more talented, are going to create more chances. The question is, can they defend? As of today, I'm not sure yet. I mean, there's some things to be a little bit discouraged about, but yet, can you make a fair analysis with the goaltending the way it's been? It's been tremendous, guys. I mean, Andre Pavlik's been great. Hutchinson in his two games has been great. So let's see a little bit more here and see if the goalies likely won't play up to the level that they're playing and if the team can pick up a bit of the slack. Having said all that, they're 4-2.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, did you expect them to be 4-2 after this with this schedule? Maybe around there, but they've played overall. They get their, you know, you get your 8 points, and you got an interesting test in the, on the over the weekend here.
Sure, you got the Tampa Bay Lightning on Friday, then the Wild come on Sunday, followed by the LA Kings next Tuesday. So you have, I mean, curious about that LA Kings game, and of course we'll talk about that more on Saturday's show, because really the number of teams, I mean, the NHL is a copycat league. The number of teams that are really tremendously physical teams.
Yep.
We were talking about this at the game on Sunday. The two most physical teams in the NHL that come to mind, really, are the Blues and the Kings right now. The Ducks are physical,
and
too.
And the Blue Jackets.
And the Blue Jackets, I haven't seen the Blue Jackets, but yes, they are physical, yeah, as well. And we'll talk about them making the coaching change earlier. But in terms of teams that really come through Winnipeg and you see more often, it's the Blues and the Kings. So it'll be interesting to see a second game next Tuesday against a physical team to see how the Jets can, you know, like you said, they're not as physical as they were last year by a long shot.
But they're more skilled.
They're more skilled. Now, I'll take skill over physicality any day of the week, because I think it's a lot harder to teach skill.
Absolutely.
But I'm curious to see if what sort of changes or how they, you know, alter their play playing against a physical team for the second time this year, as opposed to the Blues, who are the first time after you've played sort of five games at that point against what you would call skill-fast teams.
Something we haven't mentioned at all is something we talked about on Saturday's show, is the penalties. And to me, this game was determined in the third period. And, I mean, that's pretty obvious. But what I mean by that is St. Louis was far better than the Jets in the third period.
Mm-hmm.
The game was even after two, right?
Sure.
So, I mean,
two all.
It was anybody's game. And St. Louis dominated the third period and forced the Jets to take penalties. And I think Dustin Byfuglien's hit on Jay Bouwmeester, even though to me it was a clean hit, it might have been a little bit late, but what ensued afterwards was the double minor, and then Tarasenko scores on the power play. That was the game, and I thought that was one of those games.
It was Gunnarsson scored the power play.
Gunnarsson, yeah. And then Tarasenko scored the...
Tarasenko had scored the game-winning goal on the delayed penalty.
That's right. Sorry.
To make it 3-2.
Right.
But
that's right.
Tarasenko was a beast that entire game.
Right.
And, I mean, that's what you... As advertised, he's a top five player.
That's why you pay him... Well, I don't know about that, but that's why you pay him the big bucks.
Right. I mean, if he's not top five, he's probably a top 10 player in the NHL.
He's a top five goal scorer.
Right.
Not a player, but yeah, he's very good.
Yeah, needless to say, he's one of the top top players offensively in the NHL. But, you know, just quickly, Drew, I know we want to go to break here, but the Jets, that was one of the games, going back to your question that you asked us on Saturday, where penalties can really hurt you. Mm-hmm. And I actually thought the St. Louis Blues power play early on in the game wasn't very good. They ended up finishing 1-for-6, but that one goal they scored, Gunnarsson, I mistakenly said Tarasenko, that game, that goal was the one that really killed them. So,
but I'll tell you this, though, Ezzy. I mean, the Blues are moving the puck real nice east-west and getting the back door, and Pavlik made a couple big-time backdoor saves, one on Pietrangelo. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember the one, Brodziak, earlier in the game. I mean,
the glove save.
He was real good side to side. So I thought, like, that, you know, that usually is a sign. Not all those, I think, are on the power play.
Well, he made 37 saves,
on the power
Rich.
Play. Yeah.
It wasn't Pavlik's fault.
He needs some help.
There was maybe one goal of the four that you could say maybe he should have had. But one goal isn't very, very bad, right? And he's been good in the four starts he's had this season.
He hasn't been good, has he? He's been excellent. Like, he's been like top end. He's not looked out of control.
And Hutchinson's been very good.
Yeah,
too.
So I mean, the goaltending, to me, the goaltending can't get any better. And if people are going to rag and we're going to rag on the goaltenders, give them credit when they're playing top notch right now.
I think overall the team has played pretty well. I mean, again,
4-2.
The Jets are 4-2, and they've lost to the Blues and Islanders, both teams that have pretty hefty playoff aspirations, right? So, I mean, they have the defending Eastern Conference champion coming in on Friday. It'll be another big test.
One thing I think is going to be interesting to watch for the Jets is Paul Maurice is really big on creating identity. This team doesn't yet have an identity, I don't think. And I'm not saying that in a critical way. I'm saying that, you know,
it takes some time to develop, different
mix.
Sure.
But I thought last year, Paul Maurice did a great job coaching last year. But about halfway through the year, you knew what you were getting every night.
The physicality.
And the Jets came into town and they had an identity. Their identity is going to be different this year. It's going to be, I think, a number of different things. It's going to be a mix. But I haven't yet seen them play with a certain identity through the game. And I know that's hard to, you know, there's intangibles there and it's hard to describe necessarily. But I think if you were to ask him, do you guys have your identity yet to go forward? He'd say no. You know, we're still trying to find that.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Brian Engblom, Tampa Bay Lightning analyst, is going to join us to talk about Friday's game against the Lightning. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Linden Market Dental
Official Dentist of
a Legal Group.
Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior or a proper mouth guard is a must-have
piece of
protective equipment.
Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth.
Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-4287
or online at Linden Market Dental Center.
Now let's go live on the Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend, now Tampa Bay Lightning analyst, Brian Engblom. Brian, good evening, and thanks for joining us.
How are you doing, guys?
Doing very well. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm doing great. I'm in Nashville. The game was here last night. It's an off day. It's the fifth anniversary of the street outside. And they're having a big time party.
That's why they call it Smashville, right?
part of the reason.
Yeah.
Brian, I always appreciate you joining us ahead of the Friday's Jets Lightning game in Winnipeg.
Tampa Bay off to sort of the 4-2-1 picking up where they left off, a solid performance to start the season.
The defense, though, 20 goals given up so far.
Is that the biggest concern that the Lightning have right now, too many goals against this early in the year?
Yeah, that always gets to close to our attention. They really have not played that well. They played and they spurted a little bit here and there. They went through a stretch where they first probably game. They lost and then they lost into the losing that game to Dallas. That's been an issue. They cleaned that up a little bit. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the shooting game last night against Nashville. They certainly have the sh run. Playoff run.
Certainly been there all the way along.
They are definitely not firing on all cylinders.
The players are getting there.
Stamkos' line was outstanding.
And Stamkos, that was our line.
And Stamkos himself,
I mean, he had terrific.
He's got that hungry look already.
Five goals already.
And that makes him super dangerous.
So it's getting there.
It's not pretty yet.
Brian, you mentioned Stephen Stamkos' line, and Jonathan Drouin is playing on that line. Last year, as you know, was a very disappointing year for Jonathan Drouin, and he ended up finding himself a healthy scratch in the playoffs. Does it look like he's going to stay on that top line so far early on, and why he's managed to pick up six points in seven games so far?
Experience, feeling more comfortable, a tremendous amount of pressure on him because he's one of those high draft picks.
Everybody's looking for numbers, and last year he wasn't ready. He wasn't one of those players that wanted to burst out of junior and put up big numbers.
Sometimes that happens. It's all about where you're going to get to eventually. But I think he's weathered that storm pretty well.
He has played some terrific games, played his best game of the year against Dallas.
And then the next game against Buffalo, he was not very good.
John Cooper is not messed around with him. He pulled him back at a real high level. He sent him that. He sent him that. He was good last night. He made some really good plays. And he's learning to become a good pro, how to give and go, not doing the junior moves.
I think he's come a long way. And that line, they had some sustained attacks inside Dangerfield's end, which is not easy to do.
That's a terrific group. And they play a solid game. Although they're not quite up to that, but that line with Drouin on it did a terrific job. He made some big plays. He's come a long way. It'll be exactly what kind of numbers he.
You know, Brian, you look at the roster and it's basically the same from last year, and really why change it? There's so much talent there, and they were so close to winning the cup. One of the additions and only additions, Eric Condra, you know, pretty cerebral player and not the most physical guy, but how does he fit into Tampa? Seems like he would be a good fit there.
He's done a really good job. I mean, he has fit in seamlessly. He was a healthy scratch one game, and it had nothing to do with his play. They really have three guys that are competing for that last spot. And it's really pretty much a rotation. When he got pulled out of the lineup, he was plus five. I think he'd been plus two in the Dallas game. And he was killing penalties with Brian Boyle, and he's been doing that since the preseason. He's done a hell of a job at that. He's a very smart player. They like him a lot. So I'm sure they were quick to go to him and say, look, Eric, this isn't about you. They just have JT Brown and Condra and Cedric Paquette.
Mm-hmm.
And Paquette missed the first, I think, three for sure, maybe four games, I forget now, because he got hurt in the preseason. And when he got healthy, there was just no room to get in because they had won the first couple of games. You know, coaches don't like to change the lineup. So anyway, you know, Condra is sort of in that loop there, but I've been impressed with him. I think he's done a terrific job. He's been playing with Filppula and Boyle a lot most of the time, and he's done a really good job.
You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290. Our guest is Brian Engblom, Tampa Bay Lightning analyst. Brian, you look at Ben Bishop's numbers, and I mean, the record is okay, the 4-2-1. He started every game so far with the Lightning, but the numbers aren't great. A 2.56 goals against average, a .905 save percentage. You know, would John Cooper like to give him a night off, but just doesn't have the confidence in Kevin Poulin with regular backup Andre Vasilevsky currently on IR?
Yeah, I think that certainly has something to do with it. That's been pretty obvious because he just keeps playing them. The schedule has been favorable, though. And so, you know, he's going to be their number one horse for sure. And they've been able to do it, plain and simple, because the schedule has allowed it. Somewhere along the line, Poulin or Vasilevsky or somebody, if you know, because Vasilevsky is going to get ready to play here pretty quick.
and they'll give him a couple of games in the American League, I'm sure, first before he comes back up. So back-to-back coming up with Winnipeg and then Chicago the next night, how are they going to work that? I'm not quite sure. But you would think that one of the backup goaltenders is going to play one of those games. Bishop's numbers, don't be fooled by them, because the team has had stretches where they were terrible, absolutely terrible. He's been their best player in every one but maybe one game. And that's being a little harsh, because he was hard on himself in the Dallas loss, because he let in kind of two iffy goals from a bad angle, and he went, I should have had those. But he made a lot of great saves in that game as well. But still, the bottom line is, you look at the ones that got by him. But don't be fooled by his numbers. He bailed the team out so many times when the team was not ready, starting with opening night, with the banner unveiling and all that, and the usual sluggishness. I mean, they got inundated in the first period by the Philadelphia Flyers. And if it wasn't for Bishop, it's about 4-0 Philly. So there have been several stretches in basically every game where Bishop has been lights out, really good. And then, yeah, some goals have been scored, but I certainly would not hang it on him. He's on top of this game. He's playing just fine.
Brian, with the Tampa Bay Lightning having that long run last year, going to the Stanley Cup Final, basically being a couple of, not basically, they were a couple of games away from winning the Stanley Cup. Have you talked to John Cooper about how he's kind of, I guess, managed the expectations this year and allowed his players to know that early on in the season, if there are some struggles, that they can get back on the right track and dealing with not having a letdown from going all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals last year?
Well, that's the issue, isn't it? For the two teams every year that go to the finals, it's a long, long road. And rest is a big thing. So since the beginning of the season, they have had optional skates on game days. So that's one of the things, technically, that he can give a little bit of rest to his regular guys. Practices aren't long, but they are intense, like they are in Winnipeg and in San Jose and in, you know, Columbus, wherever. That's the important thing. So managing the rest is big for sure, but, you know, sort of keeping them in line and saying, come on, guys, let's go. We need a little more out of you. This is not good enough. That's not good enough. The usual stuff, but he has that extra pressure, just like Joel Quenneville has done over the last, five or six years. And Chicago is the best place to look for sure, because Quenneville's done a masterful job in it. And when to really ride them hard and get them back on track, and when to ease off and know that this is mental fatigue or physical fatigue, that's the real question. But John Cooper has won championships at two or three different levels already. This is his first time, obviously, going to the finals in the NHL, but he knows what it's like to be with a championship team and come back the next year. So there is experience there in handling that. So I think he's doing a good job with it. There's some sluggishness that you can see mentally and not so much physically, because these guys are in just magnificent condition. But there is some, you know, a little bit of, okay, it's October for sure. But the game that they won against Buffalo, and they won 2-1, Buffalo should have won. And by the way, Buffalo is a much better team, which, of course, you know, could be pretty easy to do after last year. Mm-hmm. That Buffalo team's good. Buffalo's going to win a lot more games. They're going to win a lot more games than they did last year. So who are they going to beat? So Tampa beats them 2-1, and they really had no business beating them. But that's the Chicago model. You get your big players to make a play here and there. You get some good goaltending, and you go, okay, we were pretty lousy, but thanks very much. We won the game. So that was a good example, and he really sent a message. Halfway through the game, he scrambled every line. I mean, every line. He keeps the triplets together all the time. He keeps the Stamkos line together. No, everything was upside down. So he sent the message, and they got the message, and they found a way to win the game. That's going to happen a lot, probably up through January and February, because that's what happens to teams that go to the finals. I think Cooper's experienced enough to know that. I think the players, even though it's a pretty young team, in fact, I think they're one of the two youngest teams in the league, because those a core group of them won in the American League with John Cooper. They've been on championship teams, too, and know how to manage that. So there's a lot going on there behind the scenes, experience-wise, that people aren't giving them credit for.
Final question for you, Brian, then we'll go let you enjoy the evening in Nashville there. The ice time, yeah, I guess this kind of goes to Ezzy's question before about, you know, resting and making sure the guys are ready after a long playoff run. But it's interesting, you know, you covered the Jets, obviously, for the past couple of years and also covered the Avalanche and players like Tyler Myers who came over and Dustin Byfuglien, Eric Johnson. They play big minutes, you know, 23 to 25 minutes. Tampa Bay's defense, and everybody kind of plays 18 to 20, and a guy like Victor Hedman's only at about 20 minutes. Does that surprise you at all?
I think he's managing him pretty well. He did miss one game because of that head injury, and he came back last game and looked none the worse for wear. He's rolling him and managing him pretty well, for sure. I don't think he wants to burn him out early. Hedman's in terrific shape. This guy can skate. I mean, he's very impressive when you watch him every day. One of the top guys, he's going to be a contender for the Norris if he can stay healthy, absolutely. And he probably should have gotten more consideration last year because of the way he moves. The whole team acts and feels differently and plays differently when Hedman's in the lineup. So the fact that his minutes aren't gigantic, that's obviously a big plus for the team. Cooper is not stupid. He's going to push him really hard when in those key situations and play him a lot. But I think that it looks pretty much right, you know, put it that way. I don't think he wants to put too much pressure on him early. So those minutes will go up certainly some nights when he really needs them. But the overall numbers, you know, can be a little bit deceiving here early in the season for a lot of players, and maybe for Hedman that's true.
Brian Engblom covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for. He's one of their television analysts. Brian, always appreciate your time. We'll let you get back to the enjoyment in Nashville, and we'll see you on Friday.
I will. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Brian. Soon. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Actually, it's NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on TSN 1290.
Enstrom will skate to center. Feed it on the far side for Ladd. Back in toward the corner for Enstrom. Out in front for Little.
Ryan Little scoring last season for the Winnipeg Jets against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Big thanks to Brian Engblom for joining us last segment to talk about the Lightning. This segment of the show is brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. The Jets and the Lightning Friday night at MTS Center. Game you, of course, can hear live on TSN 1290. Always enjoy watching Tampa Bay because, you know, again, a skilled team with some of the, you know, anytime you can see Steven Stamkos. Steven Stamkos is one of those guys who you know, pay the price, you know, he's worth the price of admission, as they say. And the Jets and the Lightning are two pretty skilled teams that I think are going to have an entertaining, high-scoring affair Friday night at MTS Center. The Lightning certainly can't defend right now. They're, you know, towards the top in the NHL in terms of goals for, number one in goals for with 23, and number 27 in goals against with 20 goals against in their seven games to start the season.
Yeah, they're having some, I guess, kinks, if you want to call them that, defensively. But you're talking about a top offensive team last year. You know, you're going to hear skill a lot, Drew. You mentioned skill. Brian Engblom mentioned skill. They're very deep, though. Very deep and very fast. And you saw last year in the playoffs, Alex Killorn and Valtteri Filppula play on the top line for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and now that's the third line. I'll take those two guys on my third line any day of the week. Mm-hmm. And you got Cedric Paquette there on the third line. You know, it's a player that Richie really likes. This team is very deep, and you know, we asked Brian Engblom about Eric Kondra playing on that fourth line. You got Brian Boyle there. Vladislav Namestnikov is another player there who's pretty underrated. He's a guy that's still young, but he's a guy that can score goals. But the point being that they're extremely deep. The D group is very deep. We all know about Victor Hedman and Anton Strahlman coming over last year from the Rangers. Ben Bishop, Drew, you mentioned earlier in the interview, started every single game. That's why we might see Kevin Poulin, because the Lightning play on Saturday, which might be a time for Ben Bishop to get the break there. But the Jets have played this team well. The Jets have always managed, well, I shouldn't say always, but last year they played very well against skilled teams because they're able to get up for those games, because that's what the Jets are. I mean, they're able to play the heavy game, but as Richie has mentioned kind of throughout the preseason and early on here in the regular season, the Jets have lost a little bit of that with some of the players that weren't re-signed or retraded when you're talking about Evander Kane or Zach Bogosian. So the Jets match up well against the Lightning, but again, the Lightning have the ability to hurt you on the power play, so you better stay out of the penalty box,
yeah.
Because it's not just one or two guys that can hurt you, right? I mean, the triplets line hasn't even really got going, guys.
No, the power play entering Friday's game will be seventh in the NHL at 23.8%. Of course, very early to look at those numbers. The penalty kill, 28th,
right.
66.7%. So, what they get on the power play, they give away on the penalty kill. But, you certainly don't want to be shorthanded when you're up against guys like Hedman and Stamkos and Johnson and Kucherov and everybody else that you just mentioned there, Ezzy.
Absolutely. And it's a very good 5-on-5 team, too.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're talking about the Jets, that has been their biggest weakness so far. In addition to giving up early goals, it has been taking a lot of minor penalties. But this Lightning team, as Rich mentioned, is not changed much from last year. I mean, you're talking one or two changes. So this team is going to coast through the regular season. And I don't mean that they're not going to face some type of adversity, whether that's injuries or losing streaks or whatever, but I would be shocked if the Lightning aren't a top team in the East when the season is over. I picked them to win the President's Trophy and the Stanley Cup, so shows you how much I like the Lightning. And doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to finish first just because I said that, because if you know how I've been with predictions so far...
We'll talk about that later in the show, don't worry.
God-awful.
Yeah, don't worry, we'll talk about that later.
I mean, I think we'd all agree that this is a very good team. So, I mean, the Jets are going to have their work cut out for them, but they've had 5 days off since their last game, so they're healthy with the exception of a few bumps when it comes to Ben Chiarot.
Back skating, though, back fully, full practice for him today.
It'll be another great one.
I mean, the triplets have 9 points in 21 games combined. So, you're the Jets, you're thinking this is a... There's two ways of thinking. One is you're getting them. They're pretty vulnerable, Brian Engblom says, and he's seen them more than anybody. They're not playing particularly well. And they've had their moments. They talked about Ben Bishop and all that and just last segment. The other part of that is, well, we don't want to play these guys when they get going.
Sure.
And that's a concern. So the Jets' layoff, they probably don't want that big of a layoff right now. Too early. I mean, they haven't played enough games to have this kind of a long layoff and have it be a benefit to them, I think.
When you have a street fight, Rich, just quickly, sorry, I didn't want to cut you off, but Ken Hitchcock called it a street fight. When you have a game at that high level and you were going into that game on a winning streak, I don't think you want to sit around for 4 days, so
yeah,
I agree with you.
And you're going from playing St. Louis, slower physical team, to Tampa, less physical, really fast team. And so if you're the Jets, you always talk about starts, get off to a good start. Well, of course, the obvious thing, you always get off to a good start. It's important that the Jets are skating early on Friday because they haven't played in a few days and they're playing against a quick-paced team. And when you're playing from behind, the Lightning are especially dangerous when you start taking risks in the neutral zone. And when you try to take some chances on them, even put it pinching in the defenseman, the Jets like to rush the defenseman. Those things, if you remember it, I think that when the Tampa played the Jets last year, that caused a problem on, I think it was Drew and scored on a 2-on-1 pass from Stamkos. Like, they're pressing a little bit and they were down. Now, the Jets played a lot better last year in Tampa Bay. They got a goal late in the third period, a 1 or 2-0 game. They played a lot more of a structured game, and that was a thing. So they opened it up a little bit too much early in the season against Tampa last year, and when they were in Tampa, they played a more controlled game. So as much as the Jets are more skilled, I think, than they have been in the past, this is not the team to try and play back and forth with. You have to play a more structured game, and you have to make sure you're not taking too many chances.
That game in Tampa last year, in middle of March, was the game that where the Jets sort of turned it around and they got the momentum and propelled themselves into the playoffs. Starting with that game, they were down, if you recall, 1-0, I believe.
Kucherov scored, and then they were down. Somebody scored for the Jets. Two goals in the last 10 minutes, right?
Yeah, they were down. I mean, it looked, not hopeless, of course, but they were down. They're down by a goal, and then they came back late in the third period. Drew Stafford scored with 10 minutes to go, then Blake Wheeler with about 7.5 minutes to go. That gave the Jets a 2-1 lead, and from there, they sort of got the momentum going to enter into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think Richie made a really good point. I thought in the third period against the St. Louis Blues, they were chasing the game a lot, and they didn't have the puck. I mean, the Blues had the puck for the most part in the Jets zone, and this Tampa Bay Lightning team is a really good puck possession team. All the analytics, will back that up. And it's a team that can hurt you from many different players. So, I mean, the Jets, they want to play a smart game. I thought at times, especially early on and later on, they were a little bit lackadaisical in their own zone. And
they have been. No, they haven't been very good in their own zone.
They were almost distracted, I thought, a little bit by the physicality in the game. Drew, you mentioned that in the first segment.
I agree with that. That was Buffon's play at the end really did right. Was kind of capturing that, right?
And you're talking about guys like Ryan Reeves. We saw Robert Bertuzzo bumping Nikola Ehlers around. He's got about 3 feet on him. He's a big boy. I thought that the Jets were a little bit distracted. St. Louis Blues team that has guys like Tarasenko and Alex Steen and Backes and these very good players. I mean, these guys can hurt you, whether it's even strength, power play, whatever. So, I mean, I agree with Rich. I mean, this is the type of game where that structure that was such a big part of their success last year that allowed them to go on the road and beat really good teams, beat the Chicago Blackhawks, beat the New York Rangers, these really good teams. That has to be in place because the Tampa Bay Lightning, you could be up 2 goals on them with 5 minutes left in the game, and you know you snap your fingers and they'll tie it up. I mean, they're that good. This is the best offensive team in the league, in my opinion.
And then what do you do for matchups, right? I mean, who are you putting up against Stamkos' line? Who are you putting up against the triplet line? You know, this is really a pick-your-poison situation, sure. Right? What do you do? I mean, I'm going to guess the Jets... You're getting in kind of an Enstrom-Bufflin combination likely against...
They don't even play. Haven't been playing together, though.
Well, they played together last game, so, I mean, I don't know. I think it's going to be a little bit more... I think you target Stamkos' line because of the way the triplets are playing.
Hoping that their struggles continue.
Yeah, and then but you can't take your eye off those guys, so...
Like you said, pick your poison.
Yeah.
And then you're talking about, you know, if Ben Sherrod is back there on that third pairing or if you have Adam Party there. I mean, you're talking about going up against Filppula and Alex Killorn and Cedric Paquette. I mean, these are really good players. I mean, those are also top players, top six guys on other teams. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough test for the Jets. Not to say that they can't win, because I think even if the game becomes kind of back and forth, high scoring, and I know Paul Maurice won't like this, the Jets have the skill.
Yeah.
To play that type of game, but at the end of the day, you're really flipping a coin and you're playing with fire, right? Because the Lightning can do this when this is what the Lightning want, right? That's the type of game they want. That's not the type of game the Jets want.
No, the Jets are. I mean, you can't exchange chances with the Tampa Bay Lightning because you're probably not gonna win that battle. But so far, the Jets have been the more of the defensive structure. They've been better than the Lightning in that side of the zone and getting some goals at the same time.
I mean. Yeah, Drew, I think if you're going to look at, okay, how do you compare? It's early in the season, so what team are you comparing to Tampa Bay that the Jets have played so far? Well, it'd be the Islanders.
Sure.
A pretty good deep team, some good speed. Tampa's puck moving on the back end is a little better than the Islanders, I'd say. But the Islanders came and came and came, and it was a matter of keeping pace. So that's why I talk about getting your skating legs going early. And that's going to be exceptionally important, and they have to play better in their own zone, as he talked about. A different style here. This is a matter of containing your coverage in your zone and a lot of movement, and St. Louis is going to grind you, and they grinded them.
Yeah.
So it's just, but that's, again, that's not, St. Louis is a rare team, right? Not many teams aren't like that.
We talked about at the beginning, off the top of the show, a couple teams, 2-3 teams play like St. Louis. Majority of the NHL is fast and skilled, like the Lightning, and the Jets it'll be a very good matchup, I think, on Friday night at MTS Center. Of course, all the coverage here on TSN 1290. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the coaching change in Columbus and one of the all-time worst predictions ever made on this program. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. 10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mundell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. How long have we been doing this show for now, guys? About 8 years or so? I think it was sort of starting in 2007, 2008.
2009 was the first year.
Okay, yep. 6 years, give or take. There's been a number of predictions on this program we've made over the years. We used to call them bold predictions, right?
When this is true, Drew.
In 2013, Rich predicted that the Hawks would miss the playoffs.
You're just trying to. That's true. I did do that.
Yeah.
And they won the cup.
My predictions aren't ever. Yeah, that's true also.
Hustler actually remembered that today and brought it up.
Oh, I remember that.
Did he really?
He brought it up on Twitter. He's like,
I picked them to win the cup.
I remember the time the Royals lost game 7 against the Giants, too.
But
that was a terrible prediction. Hey, let me tell you, I've had a lot of terrible predictions.
Yeah.
I'm sure this year I'll have many again. But not as bad as Ezzie so far.
Not as bad as Ezzie so far. And the reason Hustler brought up the Blackhawks missing the playoffs prediction is I said that we would refresh everybody's mind about Ezzie's prediction from about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, the October 2nd show?
I believe it was a Saturday, if I'm not mistaken.
October 3rd show.
It was the October 3rd show, so a little over 2 weeks ago.
A mere 18 days ago.
Yeah, the October 10th show. It was the October 10th show. It was the first Saturday of the regular season. Ezzie made the following prediction.
No, it was the show before.
It was.
Coach of the year, Drew, I'll go Todd Richards in Columbus.
Okay.
I really like Todd Richards. I really like this Blue Jackets team. I think they're going to surprise someone in the playoffs this year. I really liked him in Minnesota, too. Mike Yeo's a good coach, too, but I liked when Richards was in Minnesota, Rich. So I'm going to go Todd Richards. I think, you know, he's a guy who, it's a big year for him, too, going forward, but... yeah, I like what Kekalainen and Davidson have done there, and I like him as a coach, so I'll take him.
That's Ezzie predicting Todd Richards is going to be the coach of the year. Now, before we get to the analysis of Todd Richards, of course, being fired, Ezzie was also quite high on another member of the Columbus Blue Jackets. That's goaltender Sergei Bobrovsky. Let's hear what Ezzie had to say about Sergei Bobrovsky.
It was a dark horse. Just to have somebody a little bit more interesting because everybody's going to pick Carey Price. I think Bobrovsky will be a
finalist. Well, if that's in goals from the corner like last night, maybe not.
It wasn't good last night, but yes, I do think Bobrovsky's going to have a better year this year now that the Jackets are healthy.
Yes.
Sergei Bobrovsky currently has a 5.07 goals against average and an .835 save percentage. So that is quite the double whammy of predictions, my good friend Ezra. The Columbus Blue Jackets firing Todd Richards.
Oh, I mixed up the preview show and then the predictions of the award show, of course.
Yes, you're right. Thank you. I am right. Blue Jackets firing Todd Richards earlier today as head coach after an 0-7-0 start to the regular season and replacing him with John Tortorella as the new head coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, it was a terrible prediction. I mean, I'll man up to it. I mean, it was a terrible prediction. I still like Todd Richards, by the way, and if you listen, Richie, to the way John Davidson talks about Todd Richards, I mean, he's the only coach that's ever got them a playoff win. He had a good record as head coach. I mean, last year was not his fault by any stretch of the imagination. If you talk to those who cover the team, and we're going to talk to Aaron Portsline, the Blue Jackets were looking good in the preseason. Brandon Saad, Nick Foligno, all these guys. Sergei Bobrovsky is a former Vezina Trophy winner.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's an excellent goaltender. He isn't playing well right now. But again, that was a terrible prediction so far. And, you know, Torts coming in, to me, is a big shock. And again, we'll have Aaron Portsline on later, and we'll ask him about why they ended up going with John Tortorella as their next head coach. But I mean, this Columbus...
You know, Ezzie, I mean, I'm going to interrupt for a second there. I mean, crazier things have happened. Now, granted, you have to give up compensation now for all these coaches.
Cost them a second-round pick.
We'll talk about that in a second. That's a whole different story. Ezzie, I mean, would you be shocked if Pittsburgh fired Mike Johnson, Todd Richards got hired in Pittsburgh, and won the Coach of the Year? Like, that's it. You know, it's still got a chance here.
Well, no, and the world of hockey is unpredictable, right? Going back to last year, not many people picked Nashville to do that well, right?
Sure.
Not many people picked the Calgary Flames to win.
Tortorella getting a job ever. What were the odds of that?
Right. Me personally, I think that it's a bit of a desperation move. I don't know why they're going with John Tortorella. He hasn't been coaching at all this year. I mean, he was named the head coach of the U.S. World Cup of Hockey team. He didn't do a very good job in Vancouver. They didn't make the playoffs. They fired him after 1 year. If you look at all the coaches that are currently out there and available, I mean, I'll take Randy Carlyle any day of the week over John Tortorella. And sure, there's a history of John Davidson and Torts in New York, Rich. So, you know, he's familiar with him. And he said even, you know, today that one of the reasons they hired him is because he's a winner and he's able to teach those young players. But I don't know if Tort's style is really conducive anymore in the NHL.
It might not be. That's a good point, Ez. Yeah, I do think one thing here is that the team that he has, the physicality and the shot block, all that stuff that he likes to play, I think that plays into his hands. Big, tough team, you know, grind you out kind of style. So he can preach that, and not have guys, you know, Brett Hall, the problem with Ken Hitchcock, the skill with the, and there's not a ton, they've been paying, they pay guys who are big, tough guys up front. They're not the most offensively talented guys. Now, in New York, I'm not going to really talk about Vancouver as much. In New York, he had an exceptional defense that was able to move the puck, and he still played a defensive style. He doesn't have that same defense here. That's a problem. That's a big problem, is the defense there. And, I mean, again, there's some talent there for sure, but it's not the New York Rangers defense. And, you know, as he's, we joke about it, Bobrovsky, I mean, Bobrovsky could still come back and win the Vezina. Sure. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, you watch Carey Price. He's going to win the Vezina if he stays healthy because he's.
I didn't pick Bobrovsky to win the Vezina. No, I said he was a dark horse. But as a finalist.
He's a good goalie.
Just
really,
for those who weren't
a really
listening.
Good goalie who's lost his confidence. We're 7 games into the season,
yeah.
guys.
Yeah.
You know, I don't agree with the firing of Todd Richards here.
At 0-7-0?
No, I don't. I don't agree with that.
I think it's a desperation move, Richie.
I think it is. And I think the GM gets his shot here with a different coach. But, I mean, him and John Davidson are pretty close, right, in terms of – well, let me say this. I don't like it. I think 7 games I don't think is enough games to fire the coach. I wonder – I don't know how the hierarchy in Columbus works. But you mentioned Tortorella's relationship with John Davidson. How much of a say did Davidson have on the coach versus Kekalainen? Because I mean,
the general manager, Jarmo Kekalainen.
Yes, the general manager, Jarmo Kekalainen. I wonder that. I 7 games, you spent a lot of money on certain guys who haven't stepped up. Okay,
Brandon Saad.
Well, I mean, a lot of guys. As you're 0-7, most guys haven't done anything.
Almost as much of the 0-7 factor is the way they're losing. They're not even competitive.
Yesterday's loss. I mean.
They're not even competitive. I mean, it was last week we were here and they lost to Ottawa, 7-3 at home last Wednesday?
7-4 maybe, yeah.
Whatever it was. I mean, they're not.
It's the Islanders loss too, I mean.
They're not even competitive. No, it's not like they're, you know, 0-7. First of all, it's hard to lose 7 straight games in regulation. And then to lose 7 straight games in regulation and they're giving up so many goals. I mean, 34 goals against in 7 games?
Well, again, I don't want to put it all on Brandon Saad. I mean, Richie's mentioned the guys that got the big contracts. So you're talking Saad and Nick Foligno and Brandon Dubinsky. But before that, David Savard was given a lot of money. But, you know, Drew, you mentioned the goals.
Yeah.
The team defensively is not very good. And we're all waiting, and we've talked to Aaron Portsline about this for a couple of years now. We're all waiting for Ryan Murray to turn into this really good defenseman in the NHL. We've seen it at the junior level. And this is the first year he's been healthy, but you know, you mentioned some of the games that they've lost. They were actually leading their first game against the Rangers, and they ended up losing that late in the game. But you're talking about
really late. That was I know. And then they go to New York and then they lose again. Yeah.
So you're talking about, you know, you get off to you're playing a good Rangers team, right? So you get off to a bad start, you lose the first 2 games, and then it kind of just keeps going, and then you lose to Buffalo, which was embarrassing for them because Buffalo, even though they're better, you should beat Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So then you have another game against the Leafs, and you get spanked by the Leafs, another
bad
team.
Yeah,
so they're losing to a couple of good teams, and then they lose to a couple of bad teams, right? So, I mean, I can understand why this move was made. I agree with Rich. I don't agree with it. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But I wouldn't be surprised if they win the first 2-3 games under Torts. But again, you know, you've put yourself in a big hole here at 0-7.
The odds are you're going to win anyways, and you're going to get your little coaching, your little higher boost there.
Yeah.
So you're going to get a couple of things. It's how they play in 10 games from now. This is Kekalainen's first hire, actually. And I was, you know, speaking about that, I still wonder about Davidson's role in the hiring because of their relationship with Tortorella.
Back
to the New York days.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, Kekalainen came on after Todd Richards took over for Scott Arneil. So probably got one more coach in him in that tenure.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Aaron Portsline of Columbus Dispatch joins us. We'll talk more about this hiring. Lots of questions abound regarding the decision to hire John Tortorella. We'll ask Aaron Portsline about them after this break. You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba. Philanthropy is a key pillar in a strong community. That's why the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba is proud to support Community Living Manitoba and their Strengthening Parent Voices program designed for parents of children and adults with disabilities. For more information about the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba or to purchase tickets to their 40th anniversary luncheon, visit jewishfoundation.org or call 204-477-7520.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, appreciate your time this evening. I bet it's been a bit of a busy day, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a wild day. It's kind of days to live for if you do what we do, though, right?
That's right. There's always, you don't have to worry about filling copy on a day like today. The Blue Jackets, Blue Jackets, of course, dismissing Todd Richards as head coach, hiring John Tortorella in his place. You know, I think when you start 0-7, I guess it's no real surprise if the coach gets fired. You know, but given everything you saw in training camp and in exhibition and throughout the off season, in your wildest dreams, did you see this team starting off this poorly?
Not even close. I would have bet money that I don't have against it. And you know what? It's not been one goal losses and bad bounces here. And obviously, they've all been in regulation, but none of them have been closer than two goals. They've been outscored by 21 goals in seven games. They've given up 34 goals. They've given up more goals in the third period, just the third period, than all but two other teams in the league have given up in all periods. I mean, it has been an absolute and total collapse, the likes of which I've never seen. And I've been at this a while doing the Blue Jackets, and they've had some really bad teams. I've never seen it like this.
Aaron, we want to get to the hiring of new Blue Jackets head coach John Tortorella, but I wanted to ask you about Todd Richards. And I don't know if you were listening to the segment before, but I actually picked Todd Richards to be the Jack Adams Trophy winner this year. I was very high on the Columbus Blue Jackets, but you know, I listened to John Davidson today, and he said it was a really tough situation for him to have to fire Todd Richards. When you think about Todd Richards' tenure as head coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets, what do you think was his brightest moment?
Well, I mean, the brightest moment for sure would be the first playoff wins in franchise history, the playoff series against Pittsburgh in 2014. That's the highlight. I think the most honorable, the most respected line on his resume, though, will be how he steered this club when they were in absolute ruin in 11-12 when he took over for Scott Arneil. This year's team, obviously 0-7, not a great spot. That team was full of players that didn't want to be here, players that fell far short of being professional. They were overmatched behind the bench every night. It was a bad, bad situation. And he found somehow a way for that team to play with a sense of purpose and pride at the end of that season. And he did it stability, really. And that's not sexy. That doesn't sound that exciting. But when you're in choppy seas and you're a young franchise and you know, it's always tenuous when you're a very young franchise in a quote unquote non-traditional hockey market. Todd Richards really steadied it and really brought credibility back to the franchise that had been missing since Ken Hitchcock was gone.
You know, Aaron, when you're looking at candidates, when they're Jarmo Kekäläinen and John Davidson were looking for candidates, John Tortorella, you know, probably a name many people didn't expect initially, but even if they were willing to take the risk on him, wouldn't the second round pick, something that gets exchanged for quality players at the trade deadline, have been something that would be a deterrent to bringing him on board? Like, how did that not stop them from considering him seriously?
Well, I don't think there was another candidate for this job, if I could be honest with you. I mean, if you look at the situation, John Davidson and John Tortorella are very close. John Davidson sees all of the best of John Tortorella, and they're close enough, they're friends to the point where he can wipe away all of the other stuff. He loves the man, loves him as a player and as a coach, as a person, as a coach, I should say. Yeah, the general manager, Jarmo Kekäläinen, his answer to everything, literally everything, is work harder, mm-hmm. do more, work harder. That's John Tortorella in a nutshell. Both of those things together, and the fact that this marketplace, again, oh my God, they've made the playoffs twice in 14 years. They have two playoff wins in 14 years. This marketplace is desperate for something to hang their hat on, and they're not waiting around for it anymore. You can feel it when the team embarrasses them. They walk away, and it's hard to get them back. And I think they were feeling it was close to that point again. They needed John Tortorella on so many different levels. Jarmo Kekäläinen is the general manager who got his job as a drafting general manager, as a draft guru in St. Louis. He does, in part, with second-round pick Beasley. It has to be one of the next 3 years' second-round pick. So, you know, if they get the results they want, maybe it's easier to part with a pick that's in the late 50s than a pick that's in the low 30s. I think that's the expectation, but it's a price they were willing to pay.
In terms of, you mentioned John Davidson, Jarmo Kekäläinen came on board, Aaron, after Todd Richards took over for Scott Arneil, so this is actually his first coaching hire. Was this Kekalainen's call or Davidson's call?
You know, that's a good question, and honestly, in the whole storm of things today, just me answering the previous question, it occurred to me that maybe that's something to look into. I don't know that they'll ever acknowledge that it wasn't one guy's pick or was the other. They work together. Davidson and Kekäläinen are together on this and everything that they do. So I'm sure it was a group decision. I don't know that they'd ever break it down in terms of, this isn't my guy, this is John's guy. I think that might be left for us to deduce in the years to come. But certainly Davidson knows Tortorella more than Kekäläinen does. But I'm telling you, Kekäläinen would love Tortorella's reputation and his coaching style.
You're listening to NHL This Week. Our guest is Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch, talking about the Blue Jackets' decision to relieve Todd Richards of his coaching duties, hiring John Tortorella in his stead. Aaron, you look at the Blue Jackets, you got to look at the on-ice performance, because ultimately that's who really bears the responsibility, and the defense. You know, entering this season, we knew that the offense was going to be pretty good. You know, they bring in Brandon Saad from Chicago. You still have Ryan Johansson, Nick Foligno coming off his best year as year as a pro. The defense, though, it was always had a lot of question marks. How is John Tortorella going to come in, at least, you know, in your, you know, so far, what do you think John Tortorella is going to do to try and remedy the defensive shortcomings that this team has had?
Well, I think this is the answer for him at this point, all over the ice, and his confidence. It's getting the team back to a point of even competitive spirit. I've never seen a team fall apart like this. The first falling apart was defensively. Sergei Bobrovsky has an .835 save percentage. Okay, none of the mistakes they made are being wiped away by the goaltender. They're all ending up at the tent. The play around Bobrovsky has left him with no confidence that this team is going to play a situation the right way. I don't think any of this is a indicator of the talent level that the Blue Jackets have, as strange as that sounds. Maybe they're not good enough on defense. Maybe they're not good enough to be a playoff team on defense. Maybe they're not good enough to win a playoff series. But I'll take my reputation to the fact this is not a group of defensemen that is so bad it can't even be competitive in the NHL. That's not where these guys are. There's more talent here than we've seen, and I think it's all wrapped around confidence. John Tortorella's number one job is these guys are broken down now. They are broken down and ready to be built up, and that is his job, to build up the confidence of this team before anything else happens.
Aaron, you mentioned that Sergei Bobrovsky can't take all the blame. He obviously hasn't been as good as the Columbus Blue Jackets want him to be, but you mentioned that the defense in front of him hasn't been that good. Do you see Jarmo Kekäläinen and John Davidson waiting 1, 2, 3 weeks to see how the defense responds behind John Tortorella before they make any moves, or do you think that it's inevitable that the Blue Jackets are going to make a move? Because you look at this defense, and you know, you got Jack Johnson, who's -8, David Savard's -9, Dalton Proud is -9, Ryan Murray's -3. I mean, it's been tough for that D group.
Yeah. Well, they've been sniffing around trade. That was actually the first attempt before they made the coaching change, to do something to change the mix. I honestly don't think that would have made any difference. I don't think they would have brought in a strong enough personality to change where this was headed. But I think they give it some time now under Tortorella to see what happens, see if he can bring the spirit of the core up here. But they're always, I mean, Yarmo Kekalainen and every GM's like this, they're always looking, they're always having conversation. They thought at the beginning of the season that this group of defensemen was good enough to be competitive, and they plan to monitor throughout the season and maybe add somebody at the trade deadline. I still think that's the mode that they're in now. But maybe some of these trade talks that they've had in recent weeks have sparked a discussion that they didn't know would be there. But I think now they're going to see where Tortorella takes this team over the next couple of weeks. They've got 7 of their next 8 on the road. I think you're going to learn a lot about this team in the next couple of weeks here.
Coaching staff, you tweeted out today, Aaron, that the assistant coaches were on the ice and Craig Hartsburg, was running practice. Mike Sullivan, John Tortorella's right-hand man everywhere he goes, is coaching Wilkes-Barre right now. Any news on what might happen with the coaching staff?
Yeah, I don't know. They were sort of oddly curious in their answer about that today. Jarmo Kekalainen was that they're going to monitor the situation and see where it goes. I don't know what that means. I would not be surprised to see Tortorella bring his guy back, as you mentioned, Sullivan. But I don't know what the contractual agreements are there, and it could be something that they wait until after this season to deal with.
In terms of the roster itself, and I mean, you know, coming into the season, Aaron, you hear a lot about the players on the roster, and you usually hear the word character. I mean, this isn't the most skilled team up front, but it's, you know, awfully physical, very big, and the common phrase, and you know, I think rightfully so, it was character. How does a team with that character go 0-7?
I don't know. I honestly thought I don't know. I wish I had an answer for you. I think the worst part is I don't think the Blue Jackets, I know they don't know. The Blue Jackets don't know. They can't believe that it's reached this point. I mean, I can't tell you the sort of paralyzing shock that has come over the building. And just, I mean, it hasn't even been 2 weeks since opening night, and it's just, I mean, just devoid of confidence. Sergei Bobrovsky let in an awful goal on opening night. A minute into the game the next night in New York, Fedor Kudin had a terrible turnover. Bobrovsky allows a bad goal, and next thing you know, it's 3-0. And it's just been this downward death spiral ever since. It's been 7 games. It feels like it's been 7 weeks. And like I said, they've not even been competitive in these games. Last night was one of the better games they've played, and they lost 4-0 at home. That's where it's at right now. It's stunning, and I honest to God don't have an answer for you.
Well, the silver lining is, I guess, for Blue Jackets fans, it's hard to believe it can get any worse than this.
That's true.
There you go.
Yeah. Aaron Portsline covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, appreciate your time, of course, this evening. A tremendously busy day. And, of course, the Jets are there next Saturday. They're going to be in Columbus for Tortorella's home opener.
So Halloween.
On Halloween. So, you know, something to look forward to there.
The costumes.
Yeah.
It all sets up. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate your time this evening.
Thanks a lot, Aaron.
Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. When we come back, we'll talk about a team with an incredible start to the year. That's the Montreal Canadiens.
Hot from the slot. Shoots and a glove save by Price. It's loose on the rebound, but he gets the second crack at it and makes good. Another terrific save by Price. Barkov gets up. 2 seconds left, and the Canadiens are 7-0. They beat the Blues 3-0. And Carey Price with the shutout.
From the basement to the penthouse, the basement being the Columbus Blue Jackets 0-7-0 to the Montreal Canadiens 7-0-0 to start the 2015-16 NHL season.
It's a nice segue, Drew.
Thank you. Welcome back to the program. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and the home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. The Montreal Canadiens, 7-0-0, the best start in franchise history.
Isn't
it?
Yeah, that is crazy.
Given the legacy of the Montreal Canadiens, the fact that before this start, their previous franchise best was 4-0-0, I mean, the Canadiens went, they lost 7 games an entire season once.
I know. It's crazy.
You know, I couldn't believe it. Their best unbeaten streak is 7-0-1 in their first eight games. That occurred in the 1961-62 campaign, and they have a chance to match that. Eight games unbeaten on Friday night in Buffalo when they play the Buffalo Sabres.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we knew the Canadians were going to be a good team.
I wouldn't overreact to this.
You wouldn't overreact to this?
Not really. Same team as it was before. Play in good pace. Good skating team. Like last night, you'd be able to outskate the Blues, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
Is the team that different than last year? I mean, Carey Price, best goaltender in the world. Galchenyuk's the biggest difference here in terms of getting the confidence and being up the middle and if he could eventually ascend to the first-line center, although Plekanec's been great now as a security of a two-year contract. But am I getting that intimidated by a team that has Alex Semin on the second-line wing? Like, I'm not freaking out over this.
No, and Rich, you don't want to freak out, and the only people that are probably freaking out are Habs fans right now because, as Drew mentioned, they're getting off to their best start.
Mm-hmm.
So a 7-0 start, Richie, doesn't necessarily mean that the Montreal Canadiens are going to win the President's Trophy or finish second or third because it's an 82-game season. It's a long grind. And, you know, Richie mentioned Carey Price. The Habs have let in seven goals in seven games. I don't even know how, in this day and age, you do that. Well, the answer is
Carey Price.
He's the best goaltender in the world. You know, I mentioned that when we were doing the season preview show.
It's not even close right now. It's not. Lundqvist is great. It's not even close.
And we haven't seen that in a long time, Rich. We probably haven't seen that since Brodeur and Hasek, where you could say that there were one or two goalies that were clearly above the rest of the pack. But, you know, Richie mentioned Alex Galchenyuk, right? In his fourth season, now he's moving to center.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows a guy like Lars Eller to play the wing. Mm-hmm. And this team hasn't had many changes, Rich. You're right. This team, though, now I think is deeper by spreading out the talent and allowing Galchenyuk to be more effective. Rich mentioned there's no distraction with Thomas Plekanec because he's under contract now for 2 years. The defense, even though it's not the deepest defense in the NHL, it's pretty good. It's mobile. PK Subban is okay. Obviously, I'm being sarcastic. He's one of the top defensemen in the league. Markov is not really showing his age. You know, these guys like Jaromir Jagr.
There's a lot
of
consistency.
Absolutely.
The roster is essentially the same.
It's a very structured team.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all picked them to make the playoffs. And I said they'd probably be something like third or fourth in the East. I forget exactly what it was. You know, they might not be a 110-point team like they were last year. But they're going to be a playoff team, right? So, yeah, I agree with Rich. 7-0 doesn't mean that this team is you know, the best team in the NHL right now. You look at some of the wins. I mean, they beat Boston. They beat Toronto. And they beat some good teams. Don't get me wrong. The Rangers and Red Wings recently are very good teams.
St. Louis Blues last night. Ken Hitchcock, this is the best checking team we've played against.
Well, they're fast and they're smart. And that's tough to play against when you're a team like the Blues, who's not a great skating team. They play a very good five-man unit game. And it's the continuity. Let's talk about the teams that they're playing against. The Rangers had a little bit of shifting. Toronto, totally new team. I mean, they're getting out early. Even the Blue Jackets. You bring in Saad. You know, you have some changes, bigger contracts. Montreal has very few distractions, which is amazing to believe, considering, you know, you compare them to Toronto with all the... Yeah, exactly.
The biggest distraction was what's his name? Zach Cassian.
You know, and they put that to bed.
Yeah.
Bergevin's done a real nice job managing expectations, managing the media. I wouldn't lose my mind over the start. I still think that they need to improve up front if they want to be a team that's going to be contending later on. Like, they need to get one more guy up in that top six, in my opinion, a bigger guy. You can maybe even say also a defenseman. But right now, they're playing really well, and you can't take anything away from them.
Does Michel Therrien get enough credit for the job he does behind the bench?
It's a fair question, Drew. I think a lot of that credit goes to Price, and rightfully so. I think when you're judging a guy like Therrien against other coaches, it's tough because it's not the same coaching in Montreal like it is coaching in other areas.
No, if there's probably the hardest place to be an NHL head coach.
Hardest place to be an NHL head coach. And he's kind
of, that includes Toronto.
Yes, oh, absolutely.
Yep.
And the pressure, I think he's done a tremendous job. I think he's still intense but doesn't lose his temper as often. I think that, you know, some thought losing Gerard Gallant, that was really the brains behind the operation. He's proven that's not the case. Gallant's obviously a good coach, and he's over in Florida now. But it's a good question, Drew. I think it's a fair point. I mean, he's done a real nice job here. And credit where credit's due, right? We're blaming guys when they don't. And I think coaches get too much blame a lot of the time and even too much credit at times. But he's done a nice job here.
Yeah, and I think J.J. Daniel is an underrated assistant coach as well. He works with the defensemen. But yeah, Richie's right. I mean, you have Carey Price and you have a really good team. I mean, so coaching is only a piece of the puzzle, as you know, right, Drew?
Sure.
There's managing and there's coaching and then there's the personnel. And then there's all of those variables that happen throughout the course of a season, right? But, you know, to Richie's point, this is a veteran team for the most part. I mean, you've got some young players. I mean, key players like Gallagher and Galchenyuk are still relatively young.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you're talking about Pacioretty and Plekanec. I mean, sure, if you want to even throw in Semin, and then on the back end, Subban is a veteran now, and Markov, and Emelin, and Carey Price. I mean, for the most part, this is a team that's the core of the team has been together for a while. You've seen a little bit of turnover over the years, like Parenteau, you know, didn't work out, so you bring in Semin and all this, and even I didn't mention a guy like Desharnais. He's been on the Habs for, what, 7 or 8 years now?
Yeah, and you know
so,
what
I
mean, you're this, getting, right?
This is a
you
group that's very confident. You watch them play, and you know, if Ken Hitchcock is saying that about your team, he's one of the best coaches in the NHL. And to answer your question, but maybe Therrien is a little bit underrated. If you look at the amount of wins he's piled up in the NHL with the Habs, then the Penguins, then coming back to the Habs. I mean, the guy, I think, is not only good at managing his own team, I think he's a good motivator. And as Richie mentioned, I think in years past, he used to let his temper get the best of him, and I think he's a much more reserved coach. And as I said, I think he's got a good group of assistants there. And, you know, Bergevin, I think, is an underrated GM, if you want to call him that, but even though he's been praised for some of the moves he's made, GM. I think he's put together a really good team.
Are you surprised the offense has been, I know it's early, it's only 7 games, but are you surprised the offense has been there so far? They're tied with Tampa Bay for the most goals for so far.
It's too early.
I am a little bit. I don't think they're going to continue that.
Same thing, though, right, Richie, with the 7-0 start and the 7 goals against. It's too early. You got to wait till 40 or 50 games before you start getting too excited about this offense, because as far as I'm concerned, in the NHL as a whole, you've got a lot of other teams that have more firepower, right? So, I mean, the Montreal Canadiens, they might have 23 goals here in 7 games, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, this is still a team that relies heavily on their top two lines for goals.
I mean, you know, when you're talking about star wingers in the National Hockey League, Max Pacioretty's a star winger.
Yep.
And he's on a heck of an affordable deal. And a half a year. Ooh, that was a steal of a contract. Steal of a contract. Tremendous shot. Has embraced the... And I think that speaks to Bergevin and to Therrien as well in terms of... You know, Therrien was hard on P.K. Subban, but look how P.K. Subban's turned out. We always knew he had the talent, but he has turned into an all-world defenseman. Max Pacioretty, you know, to develop that slowly, and I'm not, he started off on a high level, but to develop slowly and to embrace the role of leadership in a pressure cooker like Montreal, that goes to managing expectations in the media and in the dressing room and all that stuff. A lot of other teams don't do that. And that's a nice job. I think that kind of captures the tenure there by those guys, you know, and Bergevin feeling comfortable enough bringing in Terry and a guy who's already been there before and hadn't coached in a while. They're a polished organization. Now, again, the roster as it is right now, I don't think can win. I don't think they can beat teams that can skate with them like Tampa Bay. Like, there are matchups and avenues I think they could get to the finals with. But there's a bunch that I think they could get stopped by.
Sure.
So they need to get a little bit more talented up front. Again, a top six guy and another defenseman. Maybe then we'll see how the season plays out and injuries and such. But certainly there's a potential there.
Well, the last year Tampa Bay was the roadblock, and that'll probably be the roadblock again out of that division.
I don't think they can be unless Carey Price plays out of his mind. They cannot play at that same, they don't have the depth scoring wise, and the defense is just as good, if not better.
They need somebody to knock Alex Semin down a couple lines when push comes to shove.
That's right, and you know, even another guy, Drew, you know, up the middle still there. I mean, Galchenyuk gives him more size. Not the biggest guy in the world, gives him more size, but it's tough when you're playing. You know, if you're going to be that speed skill team, you got to have top end talent in your top nine. They still don't have all that yet.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about another Atlantic Division team. That's the Boston Bruins. See who might be in the market for some of their players if they declare a fire sale in Boston. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. The Natural is on the scoreboard in Buffalo. Evander Kane with his first as a Buffalo Sabre to tie this game between the Sabres and the Leafs at one goal apiece. You haven't seen the hit. Apparently, he also plastered Dion Phaneuf with a body check earlier in the third period. I haven't yet seen the highlight of it, but the Natural.
Well, that goal, he gets a turnover and gets a shot on net. We know one thing about Evander Kane is he can shoot it.
Yeah, he likes to shoot it. Shot. And so he beats, who's in that? Is it Bernier tonight?
Bernier tonight, yeah.
Bernier in tonight. So Evander Kane gets his first for the Buffalo Sabres.
Well, he's winning the Rocket Richard Trophy.
Took a helicopter to the baseball game. Got to love the Natural. Anyways, welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. You know, if you're still looking, you need, you know, getting into the time of the year where Christmas parties are coming up and you got to plan your office Christmas party. Where am I going to go? How am I going to make it entertaining? Rumors Comedy Club. Just check them out. RumorsComedyClub.com.
Yeah, people were loving Eliza Schlesinger on the weekend. None of us were able to check it out, but, you know, I was following Rumors on Twitter. I do follow Rumors on Twitter, so always have good acts there. And absolutely, Drew, a great present under the tree. If that's what you celebrate.
Sure, whatever the hell you're talking about. I'm not 100% sure, but that's okay.
You said if Christmas is coming up. So
I said Christmas parties.
Well, same thing.
I know, it's just a buggy. I've been really giving you a hard time all show here today. As
yeah, you have.
I know.
Well, that's what happens when I see you on the street and I don't honk.
It's true. You don't honk. You don't acknowledge the baby. There's going to be repercussions accordingly. The Boston Bruins, you know, they've sort of bounced back from a slow start. They're 2-3, but nobody's got really any expectations for the Bruins this season, given, you know, what we know of the organization, given what we know of the players. Is it time for some of their veteran players? Is it time for them to be moved out, for them to be put on the market to see what they can possibly garner in a trade to maybe make the rebuild in Boston more of a complete and total fire sale?
Well, I don't know. Was that includes the 5-year contract for Beleski and the trade for Zach Ronaldo? And
no, it doesn't
include
those guys.
Trade of Dougie Hamilton?
Well, I'm talking more the Louis Erickson UFA at season.
No, I'm saying, like, what's the plan? I mean, you have a guy who's doing two things at once, and they're the opposite.
Sure.
Speaking of Zach Ronaldo, he had a really dirty hit in tonight's game.
Well, what do you expect? You gave up a second-round pick for him. What do you think you are, the Columbus Blue Jackets?
Zach Ronaldo will be suspended for the hit on Sean Couturier.
Likely. You know what? Should they? Yeah, they should, because they clearly are throwing in the towel on this squad. I mean, if you're going to put that defense out every night, you're not making the playoffs, so you might as well trade Tuukka Rask, too, if you can possibly trade his contract. Rask, Chara, Erickson, trade them all. You're in or you're out.
Well, I mean,
you're not half pregnant here. I mean, you make a decision.
I think it's a valid question that
you watch them play. They're terrible.
This Boston Bruins team right now is very inconsistent. They're not good defensively.
They have no identity.
They're not good offensively. You mentioned the identity. The big bad Bruins of 2009 through 2013 is just not there. They're not a feared team anymore. We saw that when the Boston Bruins came into Winnipeg last year, and the Jets were not intimidated physically or skill wise. But, you know, when you're talking about some of the key players, there's still a good core in place there. I mean, we've talked about this, you know, throughout the summer and early on here in the season. Krejci and Bergeron up the middle, still two very good centers. You're talking Chara, who's a little bit older. But the point is, at what point do you start moving these guys? As Richie mentioned, are you in or are you just going to kind of be a floundering team, right? Like, if the Boston Bruins end up making the playoffs, which I don't think they will. We'll see what happens here. If they end up making the playoffs, are they going to be able to compete in a 7-game series versus the Montreal Canadiens, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the New York Islanders? Yeah. I would say that they don't match up well against any of those teams, top to bottom, Rich. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about the moves they made and how this team is constructed, and I think Don Sweeney, by the way, made the wrong moves. And Peter Chiarelli, I think, built this team up. And what happened was you've seen this team slowly erode, right? Like the defense, Johnny Boychuk's gone. Seidenberg's injured. They lose Dougie Hamilton to a trade, but they think he's going to get offer sheeted. So now the defense, which was
nobody
the core of your team,
anyways,
right?
Like,
yeah, exactly. And so the Boston Bruins, I think, at a certain point, they're either going to have to make a coaching change, which I don't think they should at this point, because I think Julian is a good coach. But again, where is this team going here? I think it's sideways.
If not backwards. But, I mean, you look at the guys
who
are...
What's the plan? I mean, trade Riley Smith for Jimmy Hayes and get slower in a fast era. Not physical.
Well, but he's big, and he's from Massachusetts, so he has to be good.
Well, I mean, Jimmy Hayes is a decent player, but, I mean, he's not going to solve your problems, right? I mean, this team, you know, Rich talks about the identity and why is that important. Well, on a nightly basis, how consistent is your play? I mean, the Boston Bruins right now are not dictating the pace against anybody that they play, and they don't have a skilled enough team to play a skilled game, but they're not really playing that skilled game because they're trying to repeat those bigger teams that they had. So Bielski replaces Lucic, right? And so Jimmy Hayes maybe replaces Iginla, but these guys are not Lucic and Iginla, right? Matt Bielski's only had one decent year, and a lot of the games, Rich, he played with Getzlaff and Perry. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, no offense to Matt Bielski, but I Lucic is a better player. And, again, the defense is it's just not deep enough to make up for the lack of kind of secondary scoring that they had. Another guy they lost was Carl Soderberg, mm-hmm. which I thought was a big loss for them. Rich mentions Riley Smith. I also thought it was curious that he had a couple of good years for them, and then they moved him. So I just think that this team is all over the place. It's like a mishmash of
That's what it is. It's a mishmash. So you ask what to do. You're going to blow it up. I mean, which way are you going here?
So is everybody on the block on the Bruins? I mean, you know.
No, I mean, you don't want to be trading Krejci. Well, I mean, you may want to, depending on your evaluation of Krejci. I mean, the only untouchable, I think, apparently Marchand is possibly available. I think the only absolute untouchable here is Patrice Bergeron.
Pasternak?
And maybe Pasternak, and you go from there.
Well, I mean, Bergeron's under contract for the next, you know, until 2022.
People would give up the farm for him, and rightfully so.
So wouldn't you? I mean, when are you going to be competitive again? If you're the Bruins right now,
we should mention you're not too, competitive, Drew. Though at least probably we're for 5 games. We're 5 games into the season.
Well, I don't think he is.
I don't think you're blowing it up yet.
Well, I mean, that's a different step. That's a different step. I mean, if you're going to do that, you might as well just blow everything up. You just did get 3 first-round picks. Now, whether or not the picks turn out, we don't know. Nobody knows. Well, not we don't know. We haven't seen any of those guys play. But I mean. Again, do you have a plan? What is that plan? You don't have the patience of the fan. I mean, do you not think you have the patience of the fan base of a team like Winnipeg, where it's just you're gonna draft and you're gonna have your guys come through? Or you know, I don't know. It's Boston, but the Patriots are winning. The Celtics are bouncing back. I mean, you can ride. You can flow under the radar for a while there. You've been so good for a while, but you have to be all in or not.
So is Chara
for sure? I mean, they're not gonna win with Chara for the rest of his career. So they gotta trade him.
And Marchand. And
that's
Erickson.
Different. I mean, he's younger. Yeah. I don't know why you'd want to trade Marchand, but...
Because well, he's got a year. I mean, he's got a year left after this season.
You still have the players, Drew. The young guys who can play, you don't want to trade. It's older guys who are not going to be helping you by the time you return to contention.
Well,
to
is Bergeron going to be helping you when you return to contention? He's 30 years old already. If you're not into contention for another 3 years,
yeah,
4 years,
he'll still help you. I mean,
well,
yeah,
Drew Bergeron is. I mean, Bergeron with the way he plays, you could say he might not play till he's 43, like Jágr. But I mean, he's not in the last couple of years of his career, 4 years of his career. But the point being, with the Boston Bruins, as Richie said, what's the plan here? Is it to rebuild on the fly, or is it to do a long rebuild? Right. So if it's going to be a long rebuild, then sure, Drew, all the guys that you're mentioning, sure, Chara could be traded or could be available, right? Brad Marchand could be available, even potentially Patrice Bergeron. But I think it's a little bit ridiculous just because it's Patrice Bergeron, one of the best two-way forwards in the NHL. So I would think that he wouldn't be traded. I would think where the Boston Bruins are at right now, and you know they've got some good young defensemen, Torrey Krug being one of them. I would think, Rich, that they're going to make a few moves if they're not doing well before the trade deadline, but I don't think that you're going to see them blow up the team completely. That would be my opinion. But again, it's 5 games in here. If we're having this discussion 20, 25 games into the season at some point, you know, before the Christmas break or American Thanksgiving, when really teams determine, okay, how good is our team here, right?
In or out by American Thanksgiving, actually.
So, you know, maybe they make a trade before then. I would expect them to probably keep what they've got because you've seen them already make so many moves, Richie. But I mean, the point being that this isn't a very good hockey team.
The book is called The 100 Things Jets Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. The author is John Waldman. He's in studio and he's going to join us after these commercials. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
One final segment this Wednesday evening here with NHL This Week. Of course, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9 a.m. this coming Saturday here on TSN 1290. We'll look back at Friday's Jets Lightning game, and we'll get you set for Sunday's game against the Wild and then Tuesday's game against the Los Angeles Kings. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to shoes to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. We are pleased to welcome in studio John Waldman. The book is called 100 Things Jets Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. John, it's a fantastic read. Welcome to the program. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. What? Why? Why did you sit down? Why did you make the decision that this is what you needed to do? You needed to write this book for Winnipeg Jets fans. What was the reason behind the book coming to be in existence?
A lot of it really comes down to that I've always wanted to do a book on the Jets. Had an opportunity previously, but the publisher went under before it could make it to press. After a couple of years sort of sitting on the sidelines and wondering, you know, where am I going to get my opportunity to do this, the opportunity came about through a friend of mine. He did a previous book on the similar theme with about the New York Rangers. He passed me along to his editor when the time came to be, and after a quick market study, we were off and running.
Well, there is no shortage of interest in the Winnipeg Jets in this market, mm-hmm. so I'm sure the market study was pretty much, yes, we will do it.
It was a very quick one.
Yeah, I was just not surprised to hear that.
You know,
yeah.
John, I've had a chance to read the book, and you gave me an advance copy. When you were going...
Stop the show.
Ezzy, you read... Ezzy is literate, ladies and gentlemen. Ezzy is literate.
Not only did he read the book, but he saw my baby, too. So.
Wow.
John, just ignore I'll tell you what, guys.
I'm glad that he at least stopped to talk to your baby as well. Show earlier, he didn't stop to talk to my baby.
This is making me look even worse. You know, John, just don't pay attention to these guys. Yeah. I'll ask all the good questions here, but okay. When you were going through the process of picking which 100 things Jets fans should know and do before they die, mm-hmm. how was that process, and what types of things, I guess, were left out, and just talk to us about, you know, the whole process, because it's a kind of book that, you know, everybody would love to write.
Yeah, it admittedly was a bit of an agonizing process, because you're really wanting to both balance out between the WHA, NHL 1, and NHL 2.0. But at the same time, you're also recognizing that there's a lot more history in a couple of the eras over another. So part of the elimination process came to was simply, you know, what are the things that are most obvious to people? You know, maybe you don't necessarily need to hit on them exclusively. What are the things that are a little bit more obscure that might be fun facts? So say like Darren Quint scoring in 4 seconds, 2 goals, and setting an NHL record.
Against the Oilers, right?
No, it was against Joaquin Gage was the goalie.
Yeah. Okay.
So a lot of the process from there was, you know, what are the things that are similar? What are the things that I could talk a lot about? And one of the ones that I would have liked, if there was 101 things, for example, there would have been more talk about some of the broadcasters that we all grew up with, the Kurt Kielbacks of the world. But really, when I spoke to broadcasters, journalists, the name that came out was Don Whitman. So that was really one of the determinants that came in very quickly.
And we don't want to, you know, go over all 100 things that are in the book, because we obviously want people to come to the book launch, which you're having tomorrow night. I'm going to be part of that, and we want people to buy the book and read it. But
of course,
there are a lot of things in there that I want to get to. But one thing that probably is one of my favorite Jet stories that I don't know if everybody's heard of, and then maybe you could talk a little bit briefly about. What was someone threw some popcorn on the ice? What was that all about?
Death yeah. by popcorn.
Yeah, well, it did inspire that documentary. But the basic was that this was during the 1990 playoff run, and the Jets seemed to be on top of things, and you know, really seemed to have the Oilers really up against them. And as funny as that, we're watching the Cubs with their own curse right now, because this was what turned it around, unfortunately, for the Oilers. It gave them the break in action, as Barry Shankaro talked about, and it really gave them the opportunity to stop, rest, gather themselves, and get themselves back into the series and end up winning the series 4-3 after being down 3-1.
Didn't was that the same series of Alpo Sahonen, right? Was that who it was who called out
yeah.
Or pointed to the Jets' strategy against Mark Messier, right?
Yeah.
The same series. Is there one, John, that stands out for you of that? I know there's 100, of course. Is there one that you enjoyed writing more than the rest?
I think the one that I probably enjoyed most was about John Ferguson and his enclosure. I mean, the fact that I got three different stories on it, including one I was fortunate enough to speak with Fergie before he passed away.
Oh, really?
A few years ago when he was in town for the Winnipeg Arena closing. So to get three different stories, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that makes Urban Legends so much fun to talk about. But, you know, the one that that sort of stuck out to me is the one I didn't know about beforehand was Randy Carlyle. And it sort of started by me talking about just about superstitions with Laurie Boschman, and I sort of just candidly asked him, you know, did anybody have that? Because we all know that hockey players are the biggest superstitious athletes. And he talked about how Randy Carlyle had to be a certain number on the ice. I think it was fourth or fifth, and how Boschman got involved in the whole process because he ended up going in front of Carlyle to add to it. So I later got a chance to talk with Luciano Bersotto, who during the 90s, of course, played with Carlyle.
Mm-hmm.
And Carlyle, of course, had a different tradition at that time. So it's interesting that some of those stories just start to pop out of nowhere.
The book is called 100 Things Jets Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. It's available at booksellers everywhere. There's a book launch tomorrow, John. Is that correct?
Tomorrow at McNally Robinson at 7 p.m.
Okay, and you're going to be signing books?
I'm going to be signing books, and we're going to be having a panel of hockey experts. Can we call Ezzy a hockey
100%
expert?
We can call Ezzy an expert.
Okay, there you go.
Well, not so, when I'm picking Todd Richards to win the Jack Adams
we'll
trophy.
We'll say you're a Jets expert, Ezzy. You're not a Blue Jackets expert, but you're a Jets expert. How about that?
Yeah, so it'll be Ezzy, Matty Leibel from The Big Show, and Jeff Kurbison from Sports Incorporated.
Very nice. So great. The book launch tomorrow at McNally Robinson if you're looking for something to do that's worth it. You know, one of the things, you know, the Jets name. How did the Jets come up with the name Ben Hatzkin back in the day, the origins of the name? You want to tell our audience that story?
Yeah, and that's funny because that's where you have a little bit of controversy too. I mean, uh-huh. Obviously that it is associated in one form or another with the New York Jets, but it's a question of whether he was doing it in tribute to a friend, whether there was an actual agreement between the couple. But the more interesting thing to me, at least, is how Chipman kept the name alive and some of the names that he went through. When I was working on the original book project, I had an opportunity to speak with Chipman at length. And it was really interesting to hear him and the emotion when he was talking about some of the guys, the names that were being tossed around. I mean, we can remember things like the Bears, the Ice, even keeping the Moose name going on. So there were certainly enough possibilities. But ultimately, it was the fans who, let's face facts, demanded that the Jets name be retained.
Yeah, and you know what, John? I got to say, reading the book, and I've known about this project for a long time because we're obviously friends, but for any Jets fan, you definitely got to pick this up because, you know, we've talked about some of the stories and everything like that, but especially for the casual Jets fan or someone who's not old enough to know about the Jets 1.0 or the WHA Jets, a lot of people don't know about when the Jets played the Russians, for example, and how good they were and how they were considered so good internationally with all the Avco Cups and everything. So I think you did an excellent job of mixing in the WHA Jets, the NHL Jets 1.0 and 2.0. There's just a lot of good stuff in there. We just don't have enough time to go through all of it, but there's a lot of good nuggets of information in there.
There is. One last question for you, John, before we have to wrap up the program. Are you more of a pokey guy or are you more of a bandit guy? As that's number 85 in the book, is the pokey and the bandit, of course. Pokey Redick and Daniel Bertium,
awesome.
Who Jets fans from the late 80s and early 90s remember both of those gentlemen who played nets. Split the goaltending duties for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, you know, I'll admit to being more of a bandit guy. There is something about Bertium that really appealed to me, and I honestly would have loved to have got him for the book. Apparently, he's not all that media friendly. He now runs actually a boat tour company, I think in Virginia, where he's known as Captain Bert. So it's a little bit different what he's doing now than compared to what he was doing before. But, you know, I don't know if there was a particular reason why I liked him better, but he just seemed to be the kind of guy that I thought would stick around with the Jets a little bit more. And obviously, Redick ended up going over to Edmonton, winning a Stanley Cup in that same 1990 series. So, you know, but both of them really were the kind of guys that fans could get behind, and it's the same thing as King and Ty when they came here. Sure. You just had those pairings that people really got behind, and they were able to take advantage of in marketing as well.
Jets had some legendary goaltenders back in the day. I'll never forget. I believe it was Rick Tabarachi was traded to the Capitals for Jim Rivnek. if I recall correctly from back in the day. They had some real goaltenders that goaltending in the 1980s in the NHL was a lot different than
Rubinek was the early 90s though. Drew.
Yeah, in the early 90s too. I mean, you know, Carey Price in his 1.00 goals against average.
Dominic Roussel's in for a cup of coffee.
Never mind Stefan Beauregard, who was traded back and forth on the Jets and the Flyers, what, 6 or 7 times or something like that?
Yeah, he's the Billy Martin of Winnipeg Jets goaltenders. That's it for this Wednesday evening here on NHL This Week. The book is called 100 Things Jets Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. It's written by John Waldman. The book launch tomorrow at McNally Robinson. Go check that out if you're looking for something to do. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, Keener Jerseys, and Royal Sports. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on iTunes, on illegalcurve.com, and of course on tsn1290.ca. Follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. For John Waldman, for producer Alex, for producer Chris, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Until Saturday morning at 9 a.m., we wish you a good night and good luck, and thanks for listening to NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.